We start this morning addressing a serious issue across the state of Oregon, addictive gambling. From the state lottery to the stock market, from cryptocurrency to bingo and sports betting, even elections, gambling is an embedded activity in millions of Americans' lives. Today, video games and social media now expose even younger developing brains to gambling behaviors in ever-increasing and often undetected ways. Addictive behavior can start early and persist through adulthood. Joining me on The Exchange to discuss the problem are my two guests. Greta Koh is manager of problem gambling services at the Oregon Health Authority. Welcome, Greta.
Thank you, Mike.
And Kate Madden is director of problem gambling services at Lewis and Clark School of Counseling and Education. Welcome, Kate.
Good morning, Mike.
So both of you have been at your respective organizations for a while. Greta, let's start with you. Tell me about your work at OHA.
Sure. So as you mentioned, I am the problem gambling services manager at the Oregon Health Authority. So my duties and responsibilities is to manage the state budget that we receive from our Oregon lottery revenue. And that's done through a lot of contracting to our local prevention and treatment providers to provide services to those in the community, and also to ensure that we have a workforce that is well-trained and prepared for the services, along with some research and evaluation components.
And how long have you been at OHA?
I've been at OHA for over 20 years, and I have been in this position as Problem Gambling Services Manager for slightly over 10.
Okay. And Kate, tell me about your work at Lewis and Clark.
Yeah, so Lewis and Clark is a partner with OHA to provide treatment services to the community, both in Portland and throughout the state through telehealth. We are also part of Lewis and Clark's graduate training program. So from our administrative folks answering client emails to our clinicians providing high-quality gambling treatment, that's all done by Lewis and Clark graduate students who move through our program, gain really specific and deep gambling training, and then provide those services out in the community.
And how long have you been doing that?
Well, our clinic has been here since 2012. I have not. But as Lewis and Clark student back in the day, I was actually a volunteer at TGS, and now I'm back supporting students and community members through supervision and training on both counseling and gambling counseling.
Okay, so help me understand the scope of the gambling problem in Oregon and how Lewis and Clark is involved in addressing the problem.
Yeah, so Oregon Health Authority estimates that something like 88,000 folks in Oregon would qualify for being characterized as having problematic gambling. We're a big, geographically a big state. There's casinos, poker rooms, Oregon lottery products throughout the state. But we're also kind of, our population is pretty concentrated in the Willamette Valley. And so what Lewis and Clark is doing in partnership with OHA is reaching out to smaller communities, like people who are already in the counseling field, and saying, you know, you're probably seeing one or two gambling clients a year, but they're really, really struggling. And there's a lot of expertise required to treat gambling because while it's got some similarities with other addictions, there are some really significant differences. So we offer supervision, training, and access to clients in the Portland metro area so that folks out in smaller communities can get that exposure, they can get their clinical hours, and they can get certified to treat this wherever they are in the state.
So I appreciate that. Greta, Kate's talking about the folks in more rural regions. Southern Oregon's a rural region. You have any data on what the problem is here and how it's being addressed?
I don't have any specific data, but I do know that I think that, you know, the rural counties like Southern Oregon are kind of similar to across the state. Here with problem gambling services or our workforce, we don't have the largest budget compared to other addictive services or behavioral health services like mental health or substance use disorder. So we do have limited contracts with providers providing the services compared to those other services. And so we have a smaller workforce. So we see a smaller, and we also see a smaller number of clients.
When you mention your budget, what is that budget?
We receive about between $8 to $9 million a year to implement all the services across the state that we do.
Okay. So, Greta, I hate to mention this, but there's an elephant in this room here. The state has a gambling contradiction. It advertises the slogan, "When you play, Oregon wins." And this is to entice folks to play the state lottery. So how much is the state pulling in from the lottery, and how much money does the state allocate to the resources that address gambling addiction in Oregon?
Well, I don't know how much off the top of my head the state pulls in from gambling as far as revenue to support many different services that we're reliant on. But I can speak for what we receive. We have it in our statute, which is a law, that we receive 1% of the Oregon lottery revenue. So that's where we get that $8 to $9 million a year currently.
So that fluctuates based upon how successful the lottery is.
You could say that, yes.
So if the marketing is successful, doesn't that sort of exacerbate the addiction problem?
I don't know if it's all about the marketing. Sometimes it's about accessibility. Sometimes it's about just different things. But, the Oregon Lottery is a partner of ours in this endeavor. So they do a lot of the marketing for us on behalf of the services that we provide also. So they have a duty to raise revenue for the state, because that's what the legislature, I suppose, has asked them to do, and then to also try to protect citizens from the harm that gambling can cause.
And how has the addiction problem grown or stagnated over time? What does the data tell you?
The data tells us that what we've done with prevalence studies that we've conducted over the past 20 or 30 years is it stays pretty stagnant. So we are ranging at like about 2.6% of the population can meet the diagnosis of a gambling disorder, and about another, 5.1% is kind of at risk. So that's been pretty constant over the past 20 to 30 years. We did just conduct another prevalence study late last year, December, and we just have not, we've completed the study, but we haven't been able to analyze the results to get the most current number yet.
Gotcha.
So it's remaining pretty steady as far as it's pretty low here in Oregon. I think that's because we have a lot of great services and efforts that are going on to help bring that awareness that this is a hidden addiction and reduce the stigma around it so that people will come in for service or reach out for the different resources that we have available.
Gotcha. My guests are Greta Coe with OHA and Kate Madden from Lewis and Clark School of Counseling and Education. Both lead the problem gambling services for their respective organizations. So, Kate, Oregon has actually gone beyond the lottery. It now has a sports betting app. Do you know about it?
I do. Yeah, it's interesting thinking about prevalence rates. You know, when Oregon started the lottery back in 1984, we did not have the iPhone, right? And like so many things that the iPhone has changed, gambling is one of them. And then this addition, so in 2018, the Supreme Court overturned a ruling that said that that allowed states to have sports betting as part of their lottery program. Oregon is unique in that we only have one contractor that does all of our Oregon lottery sports betting, and that's an app called DraftKings. You've probably seen commercials for it if you watch sports. In other states, there are multiple apps that then create this competition. So that's where you're seeing, you know, a lot of the advertising. But you know, the Oregon Lottery initially started with its own homegrown app called Scoreboard, and then it became so popular that kind of they couldn't meet the demand. So now all of the sports betting in Oregon is done through DraftKings.
Wow. How much money is that pulling in?
Well, the last time I looked at the data, which was last month, since we started allowing sports betting in the state of Oregon, Oregonians have bet $2.7 billion just on sports.
Just on sports?
Just on sports. And the piece about the sports betting that I find really fascinating is, you know, I'm not a sports person, but if I wanted to bet on how many times the camera was going to turn to Taylor Swift at the Super Bowl, or what the outcome of the coin toss at the beginning of a soccer game was, I could bet on that through DraftKings. So I don't even have to know anything about sports in order to place bets through these apps.
Well, that's amazing. So you can bet on virtually anything.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. John Oliver just did a piece about sports gambling, and he talked to someone who bets on ping pong in Poland.
Oh, that's hilarious. Greta, can you give me a sense of the investment that Oregon has made in operating all these various different forms of gambling? How many people are employed? How much money does it cost to operate annually? I mean, what's this? It sounds like a casino, but what's the operating costs?
I don't have that kind of information at my fingertips. I don't know what the operating cost of all the different gambling opportunities across Oregon is, or how many people it employs. I can only really speak well to the treatment and prevention services that we provide across the state.
So talk about that. Tell me about the treatment, and when you say prevention, how do you prevent gambling addiction?
Well, preventing gambling addiction really is, once again, bringing up that awareness that gambling disorder is a disorder, that people can suffer from that, that the brain is impacted by these gambling opportunities, similar to how the brain can be impacted by other drugs and alcohol. So that's one of our struggles, is that we really have very low awareness that gambling can be an issue here in Oregon. So our prevention people are out in the community, really educating the community about gambling behaviors, having safe, healthy gambling behaviors, and what the warning signs of those are. So they're out there educating that this can be a disorder, that we have services available, that there isn't anything wrong with accessing our services, or that this is just can be a normal cycle for some people. So really just trying to increase that awareness, break that stigma around this disorder that we see in so many other behavioral health disorders.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so we have about 36 prevention specialists out in the community, not necessarily full-time. They usually are integrated into their public health departments, and they're also doing suicide prevention or potentially substance use disorder prevention. So different prevention activities and integrating those into that. In our treatment side of the system, we have about 100 different professionals working in our problem gambling treatment programs across the state. Now, once again, not usually full-time employees. They're also mental health clinicians or substance use clinicians. So dealing with other issues in the behavioral health system, helping clients with those issues also.
So
we have about 100 treatment type people, working that are either certified, like Kate mentioned, or working towards their certification.
So you answered my question before I even asked that I was going to ask you about how many. Are they spread evenly throughout the state, or are they concentrated in different areas? How many are in the Southern Oregon area?
In Southern Oregon, we have service. We have a service provider in each of our counties except for Curry. So we have service providers in Klamath, Jackson, and Josephine. Usually we have about one service provider, one person who's educated and trained in problem gambling services across the state. And then we'll have a couple multiples in maybe the higher populated counties, such as Multnomah. In Multnomah County, we have a few additional providers. We have, I think, five providers right now. And some of those providers may have two professionals working in their agencies.
Kate, Greta mentioned Lewis and Clark's program just before the break. Can you talk about the process of engaging someone who has a problem? Talk about your program at Lewis and Clark and the partnership you have, and tell me about this process.
Yeah, so there are a couple of ways that folks will find our program. We have a really strong reputation within the Gamblers Anonymous community. So folks whose first, much like Alcoholics Anonymous, there is a 12-step program for folks who struggle with gambling. And so if that is their first point of contact and they start talking with other folks in that recovery community, they'll often get referred to our program. There is also a statewide problem gambling hotline. So if you see a video slot machine in a bar right next to it, there should be a sign that says, if you need help, here is a hotline. And then depending on where someone is located in the state, they might get referred to our program or to a program in Jackson County, and just connect them with a local resource. Because what we know about folks who struggle with gambling is that, A, gambling is really easy to hide. It's not like you're coming home smelling of vodka or, you know, that you look obviously altered. So folks can engage in the behavior for a really long time, often having really significant consequences, but feeling really isolated because this problem has gotten so big. And, you know, you mentioned earlier the contradiction of the lottery is encouraging us to play, but it's also maybe creating this possibility. Like, for most people, betting on something is fun. It's really embedded in our culture. And so then for those folks who are inclined to struggle with gambling, it really separates them from something, from other people who can just engage with betting activities in an entertainment way.
Or it can be embarrassing to admit that, even to oneself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We see a lot of shame, a lot of secrets. And this is one of the ways that gambling disorder really impacts whole families and communities, because this person who is struggling with an addiction, much like any other addictive behavior, there's less understanding and more stigma. And so there really is a lot of hiding and secrets.
How much time is spent with a problem gambler?
Well, depending on the severity, we can recommend, we do have an inpatient treatment center here in the state. It's actually in Salem. But we will meet with folks weekly, and we also offer group therapy and education classes about gambling and how gambling works for both people who struggle with gambling and for their important others who might be impacted and just don't understand how their loved ones, like why they can't just stop.
So Greta, tell me about youth gambling. How many different ways do young people engage in gambling activities, and at what ages?
Well, we collect some information from our student health surveys that go out through the schools each year. And we know that youth are gambling. They're gambling a lot on just, could be events, just events in general. We don't see or don't see from the data a lot of like illegal gambling activity reported. So this is mostly just how gambling is embedded in our culture. And this, and kids are doing it. They're betting small things, could be large things, but small things on just everyday occurrences.
How do you collect this data, and how do you know what they're betting on?
We collect it through Oregon Health Authority does a student health survey to schools that just volunteer to participate each year to collect. The survey, student health survey, collects health-related data on a vast array of different topics, and we have inserted gambling questions into that survey. So we ask a question about the type of gambling the youth are participating in and if they are gambling.
Do you have demographic data on problem gamblers? I mean, for adults, what does that data tell you, and what is it for teens and adolescents?
Well, we did a survey about almost 10 years ago on adolescents. It was a prevalence and behavior attitude survey. We found that Oregon adolescents are at 3.1% risk of or already experiencing gambling disorders. That's about 10,000 youth ages 12 to 17 who are experiencing gambling disorder or at risk of doing that. That's kind of old data, though, but it's difficult to facilitate a prevalent study quite often on adolescents due to the consent of parents and adolescents and just getting that completed. But we are in the midst of currently collecting some data across the state through youth and parent caregiver focus groups to learn a little bit more in depth about how youth and parents feel about gambling. So we should have that data later in early summer.
Okay, and is there help on the campus if you find that there's a prevalence of gambling in any particular region or school?
Well, that's a tricky question because of that. Once again, it kind of becomes that lack of awareness that this could be an actual issue for adolescents. Is there available services? Yes, if someone sought services, we could find services for them, but it's about whether the adults in those surrounding areas, those campuses, are going to be informed enough to identify and make a referral.
Gotcha.
So that's something we need to work further on.
So Kate, in your work, is there a different treatment for adolescents than adults, and how do you monitor the behavior?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important to remember that folks of all ages who struggle with problem gambling often also have higher impulsivity. And any of us who are parents can look at our kids and teens and just notice that they're naturally more impulsive. And so there is that vulnerability. I think Greta's point about adults recognizing what qualifies as gambling is really important. We see a lot of our younger clients who started out playing video games that have what's called a loot box. And a loot box, in a video game, you pay some money and you don't know what's going to be in there. It could be really cool. It could be really lame. That's basically gambling. And the rush and that unknown kind of intermittent reward is really what starts the process of becoming addicted to gambling processes. So when we're working with younger folks, we're working on impulsivity, we're working on connection, we're working on communicating with their friends about what's happening, about setting limits, about making agreements. It's similar to what we're doing with adults, but we're also just looking at the sort of developmental place that a teenage brain is in.
Is there a whole family treatment plan?
We do love it when we can work with the whole family. I think that, when it's a younger person who's struggling with gambling, they really do need compassionate support from the adults in their lives to reduce that shame, to reduce the hiding and the secrets. And then when it's the adults in a family who our problem gambling, that can have all sorts of, obviously there's increased anxiety, there might be increased conflict in the home, and then we're going to bring in kind of traditional family therapy strategies to support that family system in both supporting the recovery of the person who struggles with problem gambling, but also the mental and physical health of the family as a whole.
Okay, well, we're running out of time, so what's the number that people should call if they need help?
So that hotline that the state runs is 1-877-MY-LIMIT.
Okay, 1-800, 1-877 or 1-800?
It's 877.
1-877-MY-LIMIT. Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you both for helping us better understand this issue.
All right, thank you so much, Mike.